There can be, well, two things. I love how it comes right back around to our discussion we had earlier about religion, right? About redefining our understanding of what relationship with God is like. And I think for us as men, this is redefining what our relationship to the masculine and ourselves look like. And there's so much judgment around, and sometimes it even gets weaponized, right? Like, oh, that's a feminine. That's you're in your feminine, you're in your toxic feminine, right? Whatever. But the reality is, none of us are purely masculine or purely feminine. We're not. We have both those energies within us. And when we're denying a part of ourselves that is the feminine ability to feel, to be in the moment, to be able to be caught up in something, but also just connected to this giant flow of life, to be able to be recognizing and respect our emotions, that isn't making us less of a man. That's actually making us less of a person, which in turn makes us less of a man, right? Because we aren't being whole with who we are. It has nothing to do with the definition of what people think men are or aren't. It has everything to do with being a whole person means respecting every bit of the energy, masculine and feminine, that's inside of us.
Welcome to the Deeper Awareness Podcast, where we delve into the depths of our inner selves, uncovering authenticity and transformation. Join us for enlightening conversations on breathwork, self-discovery, and the profound journey within. I'm your host, Josh Perry, joined by the delightful Hannah Oxley. Let's begin.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Deeper Awareness Podcast. Today, we have on John Hall. He is a men's success coach, and we just had such a lovely conversation. With him sharing his story, it brought up so many different topics. We touch upon codependency, toxic relationships. What I loved was he said something about growing up in being raised in some sort of religion, but then coming back to it as seeing it as a relationship to God and not just a religion. And the difference, the main difference being just unconditional love and self-compassion. But yeah, those are just a few of the topics that we touched upon. Really, really great conversation we had with John. And he is also offering a discount code to his new program, which is called Breathe Easier, Rapidly Reduce Anxiety Through Breathwork. And so we'll leave a link in the show notes to sign up for his course. And you can use code Josh to get 10% off. I highly recommend it because he was such a pleasure to hang out with and talk with and hear his amazing story. So please enjoy this episode.
Welcome to the Deeper Awareness today. We're excited to have John Hall on. And John was in my breathwork facilitator training program. So we got to interact a few different times. And so really excited to have you on today, John.
Josh and Hannah, thanks so much for having me here today. Really a privilege to get to expand on what you're building. I love the concept of what you're building here and these deeper conversations with people. So I love this. Absolutely love this.
We're so happy you're here.
So a little bit of background. I'm a technology and management consultant, but I'm also a men's success coach. And I work with embodiment and breath work are two of the bigger tools that I use across the board with people, whether I'm working with men individually, or I'm working with men through their business, men and women through their business, or I'm working with a broader audience on breath work to combat anxiety or stress. It's all built on my own personal journey. And I find I attract the people that are always here that I can lead, but that also lead to the deeper lessons for me too. But that's a little bit of a mix. And it's fascinating how I got here because I did not start in this role. I was a corporate technology executive for 25 years, with actually for more than that, gosh, 30 years. And I was with JP Morgan Chase for 25 years. I was an expert engineer. I was very much the technology mindset guy. That was my specialty. was technology. And so it was a very interesting turn to get from this heads down computer geek to being a embodiment and breathwork coach, impacting so many people. So it was a very, very interesting twist in my life for sure.
That's so funny. So I was a web developer up until 2020. And so, you know, similar, just where I was like, this is it. I'm just going to keep going. And I've found this little industry that the world needs. And then all of a sudden my soul's like, no, that's not the route you're going. So go ahead. And if you can take us back in time and to whatever makes sense for you, so that we can get to know you at a deeper level, understand, you know, if it's upbringing, you want to start there, and then just lead us forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I want to start, you know, I share with people all the time, right, that our past can either define us or it can describe us. And the difference to me is whether your past is keeping you bound up and it's limiting what you do, or it's just simply, hey, here's my story, and I hope it resonates with someone and somebody, and they can understand and see some things that help them along their path as well, right? So I share this from a perspective of how my past is describing my journey, right? But for probably a good 15 years of my life, I was allowing my past to define me instead of describe me. And that really kept me trapped in a lot of patterns in a way. So how does the joke, I'm trying to decide how to start this, right? How does the joke go? I was born at a very early age, right? Like, I'm not going to go that far. But, you know, some things I remember you know, from childhood, my parents got divorced when I was 12 or 13, and that was a very, very difficult time. You know, especially being right at that age, that formative age of looking for a man to guide me at that point. And I was very, very fortunate that, you know, first off, both my parents were doing absolutely the best they could. And I had built deeper relationships with both my parents as a result of going through this. And at the same time, it was an impact, right? It was a big impact. And I was very fortunate that I was in Scouts and Boy Scouts, and I had men through Scouts that were very involved that I could look at and I could model. And also with through church. So I was very involved in my church at the time. And so both of those gave me outlets for expression and for doing work, but also that I was around men at that time. And, you know, this is something that I share with people all the time, is it's so critical for us to, children learn so much by modeling. They learn by what they see, right? So we think a lot of times well, kids learn because we send them to school, but that's not so much the case. And they're seeing this with even some of the COVID shutdowns, where they're seeing children having an impact because they received the schooling, but they didn't receive the social interaction. They didn't receive being around other children and seeing what they do. And so, you know, when we're growing up, not having, and I know for me personally, and this has impacted so many men, but we're growing up and we don't have that role model. One of our role models is missing, or they're not there for whatever reason. It can really leave a gap in our development. It can leave some deep wounds, I believe, that if we don't address, we'll just keep showing up in patterns. And there's already been a big shift for men, especially because if you went back 300, 400 years ago, pre-industrial revolution, well, what would a boy do? A boy would have been working alongside a man in an apprenticeship all day long. They would see a man working. They would see a man in interactions with other men, interactions with women. They would see all these interactions, and they'd have learned on a regular basis what a man was like. And there's, we go to the Industrial Revolution of where we're at, and really we, boys especially, don't get as much interaction with men. They don't get as much interaction with men in school. It's rare to have male teachers pre-middle school. That was really a rarity for me, and it still kind of seems that way. And then also you have a man that is, if you do have a man in the household, that's been gone all day. And so they're coming home at the end of the night, worn out, tired. You are not always seeing the best of them. So I think that there's been both a shift in how we deal with men, but also with the divorce, right, that a lot of us go through, and we're absent one or both parent, one or, you know, one or the other parent, that causes an impact as well. I know that really resonated for me. That divorce was a wound that was there for a long time for me and led to, you know, kind of what happens next in the story.
Yeah, there's so much there. I've been diving into a lot of just the wounding that comes. And it feels like if we didn't get, so a lot of what you're talking about is we didn't have healthy men. Well, right. We didn't have men in general. But then if we had men, were they modeling something that was worth, you know, replicating? And we don't know as a little person. We model it, we take it in and we embody it, and then we walk into the world with that. We don't know any different. And so that's kind of what I've been diving into is what does healthy even look like from a masculine place? So we'd love to hear you keep going.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And Josh, I love that because we are too, when we're in our childhood, we're too young to understand what's healthy and what's not, right? Are we kind of doing our bodies might, but our mind doesn't. It can set up this cognitive dissonance of like, well, I know my parents love me and I know this doesn't feel like love. And we're trying to reconcile these bits and pieces. And I say this as a parent of three children, right? That I know I did the best I can. And I know I've passed some serious stuff along to my kids that they're going to be dealing with, right? It's just the reality of being a parent. And especially if you're a parent young, before you even understand a lot of this. So yeah, you're on this journey. I think you're on this journey of like understanding, oh gosh, I do have these things that need to be addressed from my past that maybe I didn't know was there. And I also have to reconcile and maybe reset a new level of what healthy is, what love is, right? Like I have to mash the reset button on it. And it's so, one of the analogies I use, because it's so deeply embedded in us, is holiday meals, right? There's probably things that you eat, foods that you have, or rituals that you do on holiday meals that you don't think of, but when you don't do them, seem so odd to you, right? Like I have a green bean casserole with the mushrooms and the little crispy onion bits on top, right? And it's like, if I don't have that, it's not Thanksgiving, right? Or at least it was for a long time. Like, oh no, it's Thanksgiving. We have to have the little green beans. And I think that shows up in our life too, right? Like, no, this is without knowing it. If I don't have whatever the green beans with crispy onion bits is in your life, in your relationships, in the way that you relate to other people, it starts feeling like it's not real, even though maybe healthy is something different than that dish, right? So my desire for a, you know, for the father figure in my life, you know, some of what happened after my father left, my mother did the absolute best she could, and yet there were things there that left impressions on me as well. And so I wound up getting married very young. I was 22 or 23, so very, very young. And wound up finding a woman who had her own set of issues and actually had mental illness. And then I, you know, lived with a whole bunch of beliefs around my codependency, around, you know, all these things that I thought were just normal, right? I didn't even know I was being codependent. I didn't know I was lacking boundaries. I didn't know all these things. I just knew that it felt bad. It didn't feel good, but I didn't understand what it was, right? And so for me, work became a big sense of numbing out of, well, I'll just go to work and I'll produce and I'll provide and I'll take care of a family. So on the outside, it looked like, wow, John's, you know, taking care of his wife and kids, and you know, he's working really hard. He's a very dependable stand-up guy and he's great in the community. But inside was just this chaos inside the house of, you know, dealing with a very emotionally abusive marriage that I didn't know any better of. I need to get out. I need to get the kids out of this. You know, my thought was, well, it's me. I need to work harder. I need to put more in and more in and more in, leading to, you know, eventually collapse in that space.
Well, it struck me as you were sharing that inside you could, like, did you have the awareness that it didn't feel good?
Yeah, exactly.
So, and then, so if we go back a generation where our parents dealt with the same thing, but there was, I feel like there was less awareness inside of what that feelings even existed. And then there was no word codependency
Right.
to create a label or a way to understand it. So maybe 8 or 9 years ago, I was reading Codependency No More. And I was reading that book and I was like, this isn't unhealthy. This is my life, you know, and it was so
Yeah.
hard for my brain to wrap, you know, to understand that what my normal was unhealthy. I didn't know how to pull that apart and even like trying to define it or articulate what codependency is to somebody else. I was like, I don't know. You need to read this book because
Right.
it's a problem. It's, but I don't really know how, and it doesn't feel good inside.
Josh, that's so spot on. I love you sharing that because that was a very similar experience that I had as well. Was starting to go like, oh my gosh, this, wait a second, you're telling me this isn't normal? I thought this was normal. I thought this is exactly the way that it was. And I think that illumination, right? That awareness is actually just that alone starts to break up patterns. Just becoming aware of like, wait a second, this isn't normal. If you can allow that to unfold rather than clamping it down and, like, no, I'm not going to accept that, but you can allow that to unfold. I think it really starts to break things apart because you start to shift your perspective a little bit. Like, oh gosh, well, if this isn't healthy, what does that mean? Right? You start questioning that and you start being able to move away from this perspective that you've been chained to that was painful, but was all that you knew. It's like, well, maybe this is just the way it's supposed to be, right?
It's such a hard process because your ego is like, no, like you're comfortable here. What do you, why are you digging into this? There's always so much resistance. And so I've recently find like I used to just like go like even if something pops up on Instagram, I'm like, that's not me. And I don't even like listen to the whole rest of the video. I'm like, I'm like, I need to listen to that. 'Cause if it wasn't making sense and my body didn't or my ego didn't want me to read it and I just scroll through it, I gotta go back. There's something there because if my ego's trying to protect me for something, I at least should honor my own curiosity.
Yeah, I love that because that is it that's a, that that is a practice in and of itself to say something's bothering me, right? I'm trying to protect myself from this, and then actually looking at why how it applies to you, right? As opposed to, well, let me just go label someone else with this
Right.
and make it their problem, right? How do I open this up to be, oh gosh, something's bothering me with this. Let me understand it for myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So much power there.
Yeah. So yeah, that was the awareness, Josh. That was the one of the awarenesses that started to come out to me was well, really there are a number of other things. I had gotten myself in a situation where I was 20, probably 22, 23 years into this marriage, and it was highly abusive. I was still, but yet I was still functioning at work. I was still functioning at work, but then we go home and face just terrible emotional abuse, and sometimes physical abuse, and thinking, well, it's my fault. I need to work harder. I need to work harder. Let me just, right, let me do more, right? Which is the classic definition of codependency, right? Let me do more because it's my fault and I need to make up for this. And I was very fortunate through a string of events that's a whole separate story, but very fortunate to meet up with a psychiatrist who kind of figured out the situation pretty quickly. And I remember him sharing a video with me about understanding what a narcissist looks like. And it was the same thing. Like, as I watched the video, I'm like, oh my gosh, wait a second. This is exactly the situation I'm in. This is exactly what's happening to me. This is why it never felt right. And it felt so bad. And now I'm starting to understand it wasn't fully, you know, what was my responsibility, but what was the other person's responsibility in this dance? And it was this giant aha moment of, oh my gosh, this makes so much sense now that it's starting to unfold this way.
So can you talk to us about the unraveling or the separating of how did that look for you as you understood her behavior and your behavior? And at first it was all on you. And now it's like, well, do I give it all to her or is some of this me? Like, how did you start to tease that out?
Yeah, I love that. So a couple of things happened at this time. So first off, I had again, this was my own choice, but through this relationship, I had been convinced that my family were horrible people, that they were trying to harm me, which didn't feel right in my body, but it was presented in such a way that's like, well, I want to choose my marriage. I don't want a divorce. So I'd been out of communication with my family for over 10 years. I had been out of communication, isolated from anyone in the church for years. So really I had work and home. That was really it. And so as I started to understand the situation I was in, one of the first things that really, I feel two big things started to help. Number one was reconnection with my family, who are amazing, amazing people. And just were like a day had never been lost, right? We had this amazing reunion reconnection. And the second was a complete transformation of my relationship with God. And really a shift away from religion to relationship. And it happened in just a beautiful moment at this local church that I went to and shifted my relationship. And then I started having this relationship with God. And then through that relationship with people in the church that just transformed the feeling of aloneness and shame into something really beautiful.
Okay, so that relationship, because that feels like a massive shift.
Yeah.
I felt that too.
Yeah, that there's a, it's almost like we were told what it should look like that should feeling, yeah. And then something happened inside you.
Yeah.
Where it was meaningful. It was yours, right? It wasn't taught through the mind, but you got to experience it.
That's exactly it. You described it so well. I joke. I was so my mom was Catholic, and when she married my father, who was Baptist, she got excommunicated from the Catholic Church, right? And then I was raised Southern Baptist and Pentecostal, so I joke that I got a triple helping of guilt because the messaging for me when I grew up was that, you know, basically God was this bipolar character who was both keeping track of everything I did wrong, ready to zap me with a lightning bolt or, you know, punish me for whatever I did. And at the same time, my life insurance policy that if I confessed all my sins, I'd go to heaven, right? So here is this, you know, bipolar view that I have of, okay, judgment. And this is also my life insurance policy. So, and I would literally think of things like, okay, well, gosh, if I'm speeding and I get in a car crash, do I need to be like conscious long enough to pray for forgiveness so I can go to heaven and I don't get punished for everything I've done, right? So,
and real quick, that's wrapped up and labeled love.
Correct. Correct.
Unconditional love. That's what love looks like.
That's correct. That's what love looks like. Love is both punishment and your salvation. And it was this, to me, it was a rules-based construct that I was falling outside the rules and committing sin, or I was inside the rules and I was going to go to heaven. Mm-hmm. And, you know, those were my choices. And so I remember I had not gone to church for a number of years. And I remember walking into, it was Wellspring Methodist Church. And I walked in there. I decided one day, I was like Ebenezer Scrooge, like, oh my gosh, it's Sunday. I can go to church today, right? Like, this is incredible. So I went to church and I walked in And there was a song by Mercy Me playing, and I still remember this so strongly. And I get goosebumps when I talk about this. And the chorus of the song said, bring your guilt, bring your shame, bring your hurt, bring your pain. Don't you know that's not your name? You are always so much more to me. And there's the goosebumps on my body every time I say it.
I got them too.
Yeah. And I just about hit my knees. And I was like, oh my gosh, who is this God that actually, who is this God who actually wants to get to know me? Who is this God that actually wants to feel what I'm feeling and not just be marking down everything I did wrong? And it was such a profound shift that shifted how I felt about God, how I understood what love was, that I began to understand that love was acceptance for who you are rather than judgment and a set of rules that you had to accomplish in order to receive. So that was big. It was big.
Yeah, that's so beautiful.
Thank
big
you.
Shift.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Does, from that moment, was there trauma, like religious trauma, that you had to clear through or feel through or release in some way? Or was it just a moment for you that just kind of shifted things for you?
Both. Okay. The answer that would be yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was a very profound moment. And yet there still has been this unraveling of understanding, okay, what was the religious aspect of it? And what's the relational aspect of it? How do I release that and move through it to unlearn what I grew up with, right? To unlearn. So one of the things that is fascinating, I remember so clearly, probably 10 or 11, I was at camp and we had counselors that were probably in their 20s. And I remember this counselor, and it was very well, I am certain he said it with all the well-meaning that he could. But he said, you know, my a life without sin to honor God. I'm just going to live one day without sin to honor God. And that stuck in me because I was always judging myself of, well, I failed again. I failed again. Do it. I failed again. I failed again. Right. And it set this standard up for me as a little boy of like, well, I want to show God my love, but every day I'm judging myself by whether I made the mark of not. And that's an example. That was a very innocuous comment that was made by somebody that I interpreted in such a way that was very traumatic to me, to constantly be thinking in my mind, judging myself, take a day without sin or not, because when I didn't, I considered myself a failure. And I think, Josh, there's so much that absolutely is in that sense of what we're taught love is. We're taught to believe that religion is. We're taught to believe that relationship is. And we're constantly having to learn this stuff to be able to understand what love really is. And I don't claim by any means to understand what real love is at the deepest layer of truth. But I believe I've gotten a few more onion layers deeper in to what it actually is now as a result of this.
So as you're speaking that, my journey's been very similar. And so two things have been happening within me from this relationship perspective where... And breathwork's been a big part of this, of going inward to discover the richness that makes me, and not, you know, getting rid of the judgment. And instead of judgment, it's exploration and it's curiosity and it's honoring and witnessing and loving. And the more I do that, it feels like the more I experience God.
Yeah.
But it's not like a guy in the sky. It's something inside of me. That's where I keep finding God is. And that's been the gift of the inward journey for me.
Yeah. I can see that. I can see in your face and feel it, just the truth in that for you. And I loved you said a word, you said curiosity. And I think curiosity is what leads to awe and wonder. And awe and wonder, I believe, is how we really get to fully experience God. People used to build cathedrals, grand cathedrals like Notre Dame, to experience that awe and wonder. But I mean, I've been hiking on the trails in Colorado and come around a vista that to me is 1,000 times more than anything we can create as man. And it is, it's like you feel that connection, you feel that deep connection, and you're like, oh my gosh, I feel. I mean, it's hard to put words to it other than I feel the goosebumps on me again, like when I share that story, right? But just feeling that immense connection to creation, to creator, to relationship, to who we are as individuals, right? That it's such a beautiful experience. And I find that curiosity is just so powerful. Not to just go, well, let me accept everything that's been spoken over me. But let me get curious about what this really is about and where God is.
I
Keep
love that. I
going.
love it. I
Yeah.
love that you mentioned cathedrals, because that was actually, because I was like in college and didn't, I kind of lost my, I grew up Catholic and I had lost my connection to God like through high school and into college. And then I went and walked this, it was originally a religious pilgrimage through Spain, but I was like, people can do it for all different reasons, like just to lose weight, exercise. For me, it was just to experience. And when I saw, when I stepped in, we have a beautiful church in my hometown too. But when I stepped into one of those cathedrals for the first time, it was like, somebody just created this to worship God. Like it really reinstated the faith in me. And then it was just this one day on that trail too. It was raining and I just could not wait to get to the next village so I could stop. I was exhausted because we were walking so long, so many days. And I was like, I can't wait to stop. And I felt like I was going to collapse. Like it was just my back was so heavy. My bag was so heavy on my back. And I remember this feeling of, I felt like I was being carried. And so, and I got all of a sudden, I was like, so I really don't feel like I moved, used my own feet there. Like I really felt like someone just carried me. And so that was when I was like, how, but respected myself, but how silly was I for not believing that I'm completely alone in here? Like there's somebody else in here with me, guiding me and carrying me when I need to be.
I
So.
love you sharing. Thank you for sharing that story.
Thank you for letting me.
There's that feeling of just like you said, being held, being carried, being connected, and it is so deeply nourishing to our soul to know that, right? To know that we're not alone.
Exactly. Exactly. It's all that. And that's why everything we talked about in the last 10 minutes, like that's this podcast is the deeper awareness, those deeper levels that we're getting to, that we're uncovering within ourselves. And it's, I don't see an end point. I think it's just going to keep finding more things to get curious about and just reaching deeper and deeper inside.
Yeah, and what I love too, Hannah, is that it has been for me, I found it is the quiet moments for me. Breath work has been a part of it, being able to kind of calm my mind to get out of the mind chatter. But I had a really deep moment. I was going with my first marriage, and I could hear, I was still in the same house. Right, going through the divorce process. And I could hear her saying just horrible things to her friends about what was going to happen to me. And she was going to destroy me, her attorney was going to destroy me. And I remember feeling so scared and just tired, just scared and tired. Praying. And I was praying, just the quiet space and praying of, help me with this tomorrow. And I remember this, it felt like an electrical charge that came to my head. All the way down my spine. And this is before I knew about chakras or energy or anything else. And every time this charge would come down, I would hear this word in my voice, like courage, strength, stability, right? These words coming down, and there were four or five words that came through. And again, it was this feeling, Hannah, of I'm not alone. I'm not alone in this. And it gave me such courage to go into the trial the next day. Or I guess the not trial, I don't know what it would be called, the court here. But that type of connection that you feel, and it comes in that quiet. I think it comes in that quiet. And sometimes it comes in that desperation. It comes in that just almost releasing everything. Ego's just gone. There's no ego there. Like, okay, I'm recognizing I cannot do this. That comes in. And those are just those beautiful moments that you remember.
It's in the surrender too. Yeah. And that desperation of like just surrendering to it.
Yeah.
So to be carried.
So I'd like to share. So I left Mormonism in 2019. And before that, I was listening to Mercy Me and like Casting Crowns and all these like worship Jesus songs. And I was trying so hard to find Jesus. And like there's a painting of him, like he's like, I think he's on the water, and he's the person in the painting's like underneath the water, and he's reaching his hand down. And I was trying to picture that. And I was just trying to find this something outside of me that would save me. And so then I've gone on this journey for the past 5 years of just setting all of that aside, and like this grief and this anger and this sadness and this longing for something. And it was the version of Jesus that I don't know that I was sold or that I interpreted. And so yesterday I was putting on the Casting Crowns songs that were so meaningful and just brought up so much emotion back then. I put it on yesterday, and I was sobbing. I was sobbing. It was just like pouring out of me, just all of this emotion and this recognition that the journey that I've been on the last 5 years and all of the strength that I've found inside, that if somebody would have saved me, I wouldn't have found that. I would have just been the same person, and just like somehow the like I've been in this weight room inside of developing this resilience and this grit and this strength and this determination, but I needed to go through all of it. And so it was just so meaningful to put that music back on. And I was just like, some anger. And I was just like, I'm going to fucking see where I'm at with this. And all of this new, just all these layers of just belief were just falling away. And this new sturdy Josh was standing before me, like not standing before me, but I felt the truth inside of me of what authenticity feels like and vulnerability and the gifts of the heart. And the journey inward is such, I mean, that's what we get to discover, is our own hearts.
Thank you for sharing that.
I feel like that was such a mic drop moment. I'm like, I don't even know how to. I love your heart, Josh. I love your heart so much, man. I love your observation. And you had me chuckling with the idea of a spiritual weight room. I'm like, I could see myself. I don't want another leg day. This is but it's just so beautifully articulated what you shared, which is that I look reflect and to see the growth because I don't see it in the moment. I'm like you. I am like, man, this does not feel good. I don't know why I'm going through this. I don't want to go through this. This doesn't feel fair. This doesn't feel right. All the reasons my ego is throwing up why I shouldn't be in it. And yet when I look back, I see how everything in my life has gotten woven together into this beautiful tapestry that I could never put together myself. And has led to such a different awareness if I didn't go through these experiences. I would still say I am an egocentric, temperamental, whatever, but I'm much less. I like to be much less than I was 20, 30 years ago when I started out because of what I do and because of how I've grown. And it is. I love that reflection. I could feel that story so deeply when you shared that, Josh. I love that.
Well, and if I can just, you have been such a model for me of what, because you've held me through breath work multiple times, and I could feel your heart. I could feel your protection, your safety, and the gift of that nurturing that I've needed to, feel through the different wounds. And so really so much gratitude in the gift of knowing you and just the journey that you and I have, that it's been really, really special. So thank you for that.
I receive that. I love you so much, man. I have just felt you so deeply on those journeys and feel your trust. Trust me with how deep we're going to trust me with you going on that journey with me. There is, I love that as well. Thank you for to me.
So, if you can pick up wherever makes sense with the church or however you want to keep going, we love to hear more. So,
Yeah, so I went through my divorce, and my kids went off to college. Went through my divorce. I was went through a deep thing of like, am I going to be alone? Is this it? Am I going to be alone the rest of my life? And did a lot of work on my own in the years that followed my divorce. My wife Sandy. And we met, we eloped. We were like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. We have found our perfect soul. And that's what led me to starting my business this way. And then that itself has been the journey of, oh, we are learning together how to reset child. We learned childhood to reset what we learned in prior relationships. And coming into a relationship at 50 years old, right? When I was at the time, is a completely different experience than coming into a relationship when you're 20 and you've just been dating and you've never, you're still learning all this stuff, right? You're coming in much younger. And so that's been a lot of navigating of, how do I take this tremendous ability I have to coach, to lead, to mentor, to lead people and guide people through breath work, right? And also applying my lessons of how am I in a relationship when I'm relearning what a relationship is. I'm relearning what it's like to be someone that is committed, that is right. When you're relearning all these things and resetting all these things as a result. So it's just been this. Ever since I got out of that relationship and I started this learning path. It's just been tremendous growth all these years as I go through redefining what relationship is with other people, with my wife, with God, with myself.
That's such a journey, isn't it? It's a and you can't there's no book. It's like a it's a lived experience thing, and it's practicing and it's trying, and it's like, oh, that didn't work at all. That was my old pattern, and how do I do it different if nobody's shown me?
Yeah, and that's and a big part of me has been redefining failure, learning to redefine failure. Remember, I was the kid that every day would look at I failed because I sinned, right? Because of something that was shared with me, and learning to read failure in a way like, no, if I'm not trying, if things don't work out the way I expect them to, what did I learn from it? Where can I grow from it, right? What did I take away? I think it was an Edison who talked about all the ways he failed. And he said, I didn't fail. I learned a thousand ways not to create a light bulb. So what are all the different ways that if I launch something, it doesn't quite turn out it's the way that I think. What have I learned from it? Where can I grow from it? Totally redefining it. And then the mindset work. I think one of the biggest challenges for me, and so many of the people I work with too, has been the mindset of being an entrepreneur or being in a startup or a small company, and that mindset work being done to believe yourself, to have the confidence to get up and go again, the ability to learn and grow, the ability to keep broadening your perspective and setting your ego aside to say, what else can I do? Mindset work. Has been that's where breath work has really come so much for me is eliminating the mind chatter, and being able to learn to focus my mind for longer periods of time.
How did you find breath work?
I had done it was entirely through my wife, Sandy. She had introduced me at first to Wim Hof, which I thought was crazy. Like she basically said, "Hey, I got you a ticket to this event, and you're gonna go hop in an ice bath." And breathe and hop in an ice bath. And I'm like, this is insane, but I'll go try this because I'm open. And I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I love doing the breath work. I love doing the holds. I love being in the cold ice bath and learning how to do it longer and longer. Open the door. And then I tried some holotropic breathing, some different breath styles, but pause. Actually, my wife had originally the certification and the time working out. So we contacted Pause and said, well, I said, hey, I can do this. I can do this. And then you can sign up the next time for your certification because the timing wasn't working out. And it just wound up being serendipity and everything opened up. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. Right. And I love what I love is the comments I get from so many people that they go deeper with. Or invitational trauma-informed breathwork style than they do with anything else. And they told me, I've done this. I hear so many times, I have done this so much before. I've ever gone in meditation or in awareness or revelation or whatever it happens to be for them. So it's just been as I've learned it, I've loved it. And it has been such a tremendous tool. To build in my own life as well, to just calm my mind, calm my body, be able to get a different perspective for sure.
And so, were you already a men's coach before you got certified for breath work, or is that okay?
So I was doing embodiment work with men, but I had incorporated the breath work into it, right? So my wife and I were coaching couples. She and I coach men. I had been working with men directly and with men and women through relationship, but the breathwork piece and bringing that in for anxiety and stress and understanding how our amygdala likes to take over when we get stressed and how we can just kind of guide our body's stress response has been just so powerful for so many people. That's something I, in fact, I built a, my stepmom is a counselor at a college. A college town. And she talks about how many people just have stress and anxiety. I'm like, we can do something about this. We could absolutely do something about this, right? And do something that does not take medication, doesn't take drugs, and just redirects what our body is already capable of. So As I mentioned, there are so many people. Myself, this is from my own personal journey of feeling stress so deeply, starting to become anxious, my mind just jumping in a thousand different directions, getting frustrated with myself because I feel like, oh, I should calm down. I shouldn't be reacting this way. And as I understood more and learned more how to adapt to this, I put a course together, a two-week course, small course, with videos, with guided breath work, with guided meditation, that's basically, here's why you're reacting this way in a stress response. It's your biological. This is how we're wired. And here's where we actually can bring our awareness in and re-guide it. And so that's a two-week self-guided course that I built that really allows you in a situation where you're starting, you know, two parts to it. Number one is, I'm starting to feel stressed or anxious. How do I redirect this? How do I get out of it? But also, how do I build up a capacity to handle more situations? So what I'm offering is 10% off that course to anybody who's a listener, and we'll share the link. Again, they get immediate access to the videos, to the breath work, to the meditations, and it's a powerful, powerful course that is just something that will transform how you handle stress and reduce anxiety within a week if you're dedicated to it.
Wow, that's huge.
Yeah. I was thinking if we learn that in kindergarten, like the gift that you're just in 2 weeks, right? Just the understanding of here's what it is. It's normal. It's your biology. And we can also hack in, right? And we can do different. And I love the idea of expanding that tolerance too.
Yeah. And I love, and Josh, I love what you said, because if we had were taught this earlier, right? Think of if we had been taught how somatic work, if we'd been taught how to recognize our bodies and our emotions, and we've been taught this in an early age, and some people learn this, some people have great childhoods and they learn this and they're taught this. But I know for myself, it was, you know, hey, no, get yourself under control. Don't react this way. And you start to disassociate how your body's feeling with what your mind's telling you. And then what do we do in school, right? We're telling kids, hey, sit down, be quiet, stay focused, right? We're expecting kids to sit in a classroom for hours each day on a topic that's chosen between bell A and bell B. And then a lot of us today wind up in very intellectual careers. So, you know, Josh, you and I, with a technology background, right? We're up in our heads, solving problems, right? Thinking things through. But what happens? We totally disconnect with everything else in our body. And so learning to reconnect to your body, learning to recognize what's going on, learning that, you know, it's kind of like, okay, well, this feeling's coming. The feeling doesn't have to define me or take over, but I can be aware of it. This body sensation doesn't have to take over, but I can be aware of it. And starting to learn that attunement, man, I wish they did teach it to third graders and fourth graders and they learned how to do that, right?
So there is a shift in consciousness. So my daughter's 13 and she has a health coach that has her meditate. And she's like, Dad, you should email her and see if you can come to do breath work. And so I sent the email and I haven't heard back, but it's starting to be, you know, injected into our school system, even if it's in little ways.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. In Boston, it's been a struggle because it's breathwork is just not a thing like it is on the West Coast. I'm curious how it is in Florida too, but like it's been trying to really get the word out has been a welcomed challenge. But so like I teach a class at the local senior center and they are so adorable, but they're also like, they are so passionate about getting me into the school system. They're so adorable. And so, cause they're amazed that it's not, and I've tried a few times, so I've gotten a few things. I've had a couple presentations, but I have faith. I really do. I think people are, as soon as they try it and know and realize that this feeling it can only come when you really just sit with yourself, like and be guided too. I think people are really starting to wake up to it.
I love that. And I've had kind of a similar experience. I think people are starting to wake up to it. I find some of the entrepreneurs that I work with are more open than other areas. But, I know for me personally, being able to focus on my breath works so much more to improve my concentration than trying to go, let me just focus on let me clear my mind, right? Like a lot of us get basic meditation, just clear your mind. It's like, that's not working. I've got a thousand things screaming at me. But being able to go, let me focus on my breath. And I love you're doing it for, local seniors and working to get into school. I'm really passionate. I would love to bring this into church. Bring this into churches, especially pastoral staff that are under so much stress, because they're just in the magnifying glass. And I actually have family that's in law enforcement, and I am really passionate about bringing this into law enforcement.
I am too. I am too.
Yeah. That is such a stressful position. Going into a home, going into a stop, and you're dealing with so much. And we hear a lot, the news stories where they don't handle it well get amplified so much, and you forget what these people are dealing with, how many times it goes right. But, giving them a tool set to be like, hey, I can calm down. I can use my body to calm down in this situation, even if the people next to me aren't. And the thing is, what I found too is through somatic work, if I'm aware enough to take a nice deep breath and ground myself, that tends to start impacting the people around me as well. Like they start calming down, right? So how powerful a tool would it be to have law enforcement personnel that have tool sets they can draw from to go, hey, let me ground, let me get, let me be able to get back to centered and not feel so much of the anxiety or stress or, attack that's coming from this person, to be able to think calmly and clearly in this situation.
And all first responders in general too, I'd love to do for fire departments and stuff too. I've asked a couple times and they kind of looked at me funny, but I'm going to keep trying. Keep trying.
I think that's it. I mean, this is breath work is, it's not new because people have been doing it for millennia, but it is new in terms of being, let's bring this in and adapt it in new spaces and new ways. But I think it's so powerful. It's so powerful. I love we have that as a common element to talk about in this. Yeah.
Absolutely.
My friend held space through breath work for a first responder group inside a firehouse. And because they can have, like, in one given day, just traumatic event, traumatic event, traumatic event. And then if you compound that over a decade or more, to have them sit still and feel what's in their body, it's too much. It's like to go from zero to suddenly feeling, it's just like, no, I'm not doing this. And it makes so much sense. And so, like, it feels like it needs, like, the kid gloves of really being so careful and really honoring their daily experience and really speaking to their logical mind of, yeah, you're going through all of this, and this is so much for your organs and your nervous system. And there's no way to not take what you've gone through in a day, take it home to your kids, and of course they don't want to bring it home, but if they don't have the understanding of what to do different, like understanding the amygdala, like you were talking about, and then creating the capacity once more. So it's such a needed thing. And for nurses, you can see just all these different career paths that people go on with no understanding of how to turn it off or to soften or to release. Or so breathworks, it's got to be a big part of what our society needs.
Yeah. And Josh, I love that the somatic connection, right? Because otherwise, like you say, if we don't know how to release it, we store it up inside, and it stores somewhere. in our body. And animals are so much better naturally at dealing with this than we are. We had a house guest over a month or so ago, and she had a little chihuahua puppy, right? Just, I mean, like I'm holding my hands up, but like, yeah, I mean, it couldn't have been more than, I don't know, 8, 9 inches. And we couldn't find him. We're looking all through the yard. All of a sudden we're like, oh my gosh, we don't know where he is. We're looking all through the yard. We're looking all through the house. We can't find him. And all of a sudden we hear this noise outside our upstairs second story window. We hear this noise and we're like, oh my gosh, I think he's on the roof. And we look out, my wife goes out and grabs Sandy, grabs him and pulls him back in. And he had managed to get up. He squeezed through the gate onto our roof, right? So our door was open to the balcony outside our second story bedroom, squeezed through the bars, got out on the roof, and then somehow went uphill, didn't fall off the roof, but went uphill and was outside another window. So we put him down on the ground and he does this whole shake and this whole tremble and everything like that and starts shaking. And we're talking about it for like 2 days. We're like, oh my gosh, it was so, I can't believe he was up there. That was so anxious, right? And then we kind of realized like he got through this thing. He shook, he trembled, he got through, he moved this whole experience of, oh my gosh, I'm a tiny chihuahua puppy 25 feet up in the air on a hot metal roof, and moved it through his body. Whereas we were like still talking about it for days, trying to wrap our head around what might have happened. And you know, I think sometimes like the little chihuahua part of us would be so much more adept at getting rid of this stuff if we knew how to like recognize what we're carrying with us, what we're carrying home from work, not even as a first responder, sometimes being in a corporate job or, you know, any position, like what we carry with us and we don't let go. And it just sticks around with us for so long, right?
Mm-hmm. He literally shook it off.
He literally shook it off. We just watched him. We put him on the ground and he started doing the whole, like whole body for about 20, 30 seconds. And then was off playing with our corgis.
Wow.
Like done. I'm good.
Well, I told you before we started recording about these bombs getting detonated near my house. As I was all like flustered going outside, trying to see what was going on, coming back inside, I was like, oh, I hope my dog's okay. She's lying on the couch like, she's like, what are you guys all upset about? Like, so I know some dogs get freaked out with fireworks. A lot of dogs do, but she was just like, it's just a loud noise. It's fine. Yeah. They do. They shake it off.
But you know what? I noticed my, so we have three corgis. We have two that are Sandy and mine. And then a third that's our stepson. That's our son, Cameron. So we have, they all react to fireworks differently. But we learned, right, the more calm we are,
mm-hmm.
the more they are, right?
So they kind of look
at us. So the more calm we are, they're like, okay, this isn't such a big deal.
Yeah.
Right. But that's just like us, right? When we get in a traumatic situation, for us to unwind some of this stuff, we have to feel safe. We have to see someone that is validating of our experience, right? We have to see someone that we know is safe enough to care for us. Right. So it's kind of, I don't know why that came to mind. I guess just the analogy of what we do,
yeah.
Right. We have to be able to feel safe ourselves to unwind some of this.
Yeah. Like one of my favorite shows was the Dog Whisperer. And then because Caesar, the host, if no one's ever watched it, that's all he talks about is how it's all energy. And how, especially when you're walking a dog, that leash is like you're tied to it. You know, you're tied to the animal no matter what. But physically, when you're holding the leash to the dog, like the dog's going to feel everything that you're feeling. So that's what he always says. He's like, it's not the dog. It's the people.
we hired so Sandy hired a dog whisperer to come work with our dogs. And he's local here in Florida. So he showed up. And we really thought like, oh, we're hiring this guy. He's going to work with the dogs. I think 80% of the time he was working with us. Mm-hmm. He's like,
I believe
here's
it.
What you need to know about owning a dog. Even though you've owned dogs for 20 years, here's what you need to know. And it was the same thing. It's all energy. Mm. It's all energy, right? And they are looking to that. They are so sensitive to that. You know, but that's how they're learning. That's they're looking to you to go, am I safe? Can I relax? Do I need to step up and be in charge?
Exactly.
Can you imagine if we had coaches that would come in as human whisperers and said, here's what you're going to need to know if you have a nervous system or an amygdala. Here's what you need, you know, here's how you calm it down. We have these bodies that are just so intricate and high tech. And we're just like, I don't know how to do this thing.
And the reminder that it's all energy for us. So it's just all energy.
And we're in these bodies. Like you say, we're in these bodies that are reacting to that. We are in, we have a soul that's reacting to that. We have emotions that are energy as well, that are reactive to what's going on. And then we react to that. Yeah. I mean, how much, maybe I'll rebrand my, I'll be a people whisper. How the new job titles will all take on is people whisper. Just how much is that? We're coming in and we're training people exactly that. Like, here's what's going on with your body. Here's what's going on with your emotion. Here's what's going on with your nervous system in your body and how it reacts. And here's how to guide that. Here's how to start to build a relationship with your body, with your emotions, with your nervous system, that you can learn to write it and redirect it in the way you want it to go instead of just being hijacked, right?
And you said your key word there again, that relationship. So
yeah.
true.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'd love to hear more about your experience with men. So how long have you been a men's coach?
So that has been 5 years now.
Okay.
I've been with men directly. Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm guessing as your journey has gone, so has your coaching, your understanding of men and working with men. We get feedback as we experience and we're like, okay, I was coaching this guy day one, you know, 5 years ago. And it was like, I do it this way now because I've learned these things. So can you talk to us about maybe healthy masculine and the things that you're uncovering in yourself? And as you're working with people, what would benefit our society if we really understood what that healthy masculine looked like?
Wow, this is such a great question. I love this. I'm going to, you know, a couple of things that we touched on first, right? Let me back up a second. I'm going to start with just kind of recognizing the challenges that I think men face in society today. The structure of who we aren't around healthy men in to the same degree that maybe 400 or 500 years ago we could have been, right?
If I can add a little piggyback question, like you were talking about how, you know, way back when you'd have the apprentice and your hands-on work and stuff. And so maybe you can also answer how you see that differing in like the tech world. Like, do you still get that mentorship, or do our devices kind of take a little bit of that away from us?
Well, I'm going to differentiate between there's absolutely mentorship that happens at a technical or training level with men or women in industry across the board, right? So I think at a technical level, there's a lot of times you'll get a mentor and a protege relationship that comes up to train you in skills for an industry or a technology or a business or corporate career, right? So I think that absolutely happens a lot. But what I'm talking about is more being around a healthy man, right? To learn what healthy masculinity is, to be able to see that model, to be able to see that modeled in a way that it's a quantity transfer, right? It is a transfer of being around that a long period of time, rather than just here's a book, go read it, and you're expected to now be a man. There was a years ago, there was an area of Africa that they wanted to reintroduce elephants to. And they went out and they got these young juvenile elephants, right? Because it was expensive to transfer them and transport them. So they went with juvenile males because that would allow the males to live the longest and then breed with the females and recreate the population. So they went out and they got these juvenile elephants and they brought them to the park. And within weeks, they were literally talking about potentially having to cull the elephants because these male elephants were going on a rampage. They were destroying everything. They were ripping up crops, destroying, farms or fences. Like it was a really bad situation. And, you know, an elephant is a pretty big force of nature when you think about it. And fortunately, they had an older biologist who said, look, before you go to extremes of, you know, potentially killing these elephants, right, culling them, go get an older male elephant and bring them in. And they brought an older bull in and they introduced the bull to this same park. And within days, the juvenile males had calmed down because they started looking to the old bull on how to act and how to respond in a situation and learn what was appropriate and what wasn't. And so I think there's such a powerful analogy for us as men, because we, first off, I think men are often expected to solve it on their own. It's seen as a weakness if we turn to anyone else. And there's this dichotomy of men, right? We expect men to be very strong. Like we criticize men for being too strong and doing things on their own, but then we criticize men for not being strong enough. And so we wind up with this situation of men are expected to be, you know, like this right layer of strong and strength without getting any outside support a lot of times. And so one of the really powerful things is, you know, for men to recognize, hey, I don't have to do this on my own. I don't have to solve this. There are other men like me that are struggling with the same things, that are trying to sort things out, and that it's okay for me to reach out and ask for help. It's okay for me to reach out and get someone to support me. So I think that's a part of it, is being able to recognize that, right, in the situation that men are in. The other thing is, you know, a lot of times recognizing years ago, and some cultures still recognize and have a rite of passage to men, but in the Western world, we have pretty much eliminated this passage to manhood, right? And you just kind of de facto fall into, well, you're going to college, but that doesn't make you a man. You're buying a car, that doesn't make you a man. You're getting married, that doesn't necessarily make you a man. You're getting a job, right? Whatever order those are in. And so I think also the ability to recognize that we almost have to grant ourselves our own passage to manhood nowadays. I know there are groups that do specific passages, but I think it's really the recognition of like, well, it's coming to grips with yourself of what makes me a man and what, how am I here, right? How do I give this to myself? I think one of the challenges of, if we're looking for external organizations or our partner or our parents or whoever to say you're a man and define that to you, it also means that they can take it back. So how do we define that for ourselves? How do we define for ourselves, okay, I have reached manhood and I still don't have all the answers and that's okay.
Letting that soak in. Because it's a, so I'll be 51 this year in a couple months. And I finally feel like there's some depth to my masculinity that I've found it. So for me, it's been shedding all these programs. And so much of what has gotten in my way was all these constricted, like, stay in this box. Don't act this way. You can't be this way. And a lot of those for me were feminine traits, meaning softness or sensitivity that I saw as weakness, and my ability to nurture or to honor or love. Those felt like weaknesses. So I was like, okay, I can't be that. And then I was just left with like this pencil sized dot of self. And I was like, am I a man now? Like, what am I? What have I become? And so this, can we do that for teenagers where they can they find the depth of who they are. Not saying they've arrived, but there's some meat that they can hang on to and then take steps and allowing it to be messy and this curiosity and discovery, and that men, that we're all different as men. And that doesn't mean, like, strength can look like vulnerability and it can look like tenderness. And there's such, like, I feel like that's what our men are lacking right now, is these feminine traits.
Yeah, and it's there can be, well, two things. I love how it comes right back around to our discussion we had earlier about religion, right? About redefining our understanding of what relationship with God is like. And I think for us as men, this is redefining what our relationship to the masculine and ourselves look like. And there's so much judgment around, and sometimes it even gets weaponized, right? Like, oh, that's a feminine. That's, you're in your feminine, you're in your toxic feminine, right? Whatever. But the reality is, none of us are purely masculine or purely feminine. We're not. We have both those energies within us. And when we're denying a part of ourselves that is the feminine ability to feel, to be in the moment, to be able to be caught up in something, but also just connected to this giant flow of life, to be able to be recognizing and respect our emotions, that isn't making us less of a man. That's actually making us less of a person, which in turn makes us less of a man, right? Because we aren't being whole with who we are. It has nothing to do with the definition of what people think men are or aren't. It has everything to do with being a whole person means respecting every bit of the energy, masculine and feminine, that's inside of us. And what's fascinating is, and I'm there was some work done by Brené Brown, and I'm probably going to misquote this a bit, but I'm going to share it to the best of my knowledge. And she says, if you show me a woman who can sit with a man with all of his truest emotions, that's a woman who's really done some work. Because it is not just men that keep men in the trap of this is what masculinity looks like. It's women as well. And for a woman who can sit down with a man who can say, I have lost my job and I can't provide for us the same way I want to anymore. I just had my dad die and I am brokenhearted, right? Or this issue's going on with me and my health and I am terrified about what that means. For a woman who can see a man be vulnerable, be exposed, to be that raw and real, because a lot of times that will scare the hell out of a woman. Like, oh my gosh, well, no, you've got to be the strong one. You've got to be the leader if you aren't there, right? For a woman in a relationship to be able to see this man is both a warrior and he can have his own wounds and his own feminine connection and his own reality of what makes him a human, that is also as important as men being able to accept men for every bit of who they are as a human as well.
So I'll share this story. I shared this on Facebook last week, but I had this memory come up as I was doing some work this past weekend. And so I got divorced in 2018, and my ex-wife, maybe 10 years ago, we were married at the time. She was going through this medical, just a lot of scary health stuff going on. And we were sitting in a doctor's office. She was on like the doctor's bed. What are those called?
Examination table.
Yes, thank you. And I'm sitting against the wall, stoic and unfeeling, and she was so scared. There was so much uncertainty going on inside of her, and I thought my role was to be strong, and my definition of strong was unfeeling,
stoic.
Yeah. And so she in her desperation, she was emotionally, her heart was reaching out to me and was like, she said, "Where are you?" Just pleading. And there was no way for the then me to comprehend what she was longing for, to meet her there, because I had learned along the way, no, this is how strong men are. I'm here, but I was so not there.
Yeah, that has been one of my, that resonates so much because that's been part of my own journey as well, has been, and we shared this with the first responders earlier too, right? That like getting in touch with those emotions for the first time can almost be overwhelming, right? We're taught so often to be stoic as men, to be, you know, the silent, and silent is what, silence defines strength, right? Mm. Like if you're sitting there calm and stoically, that's what defines your strength. And I think at the same time, though, I know for myself, it was like when I would start connecting with these emotions, and then you're feeling that going through your body, and you are not used to that, you start to feel out of control. It was terrifying to me. Like, what is happening? I don't know what to do with this, right? So what happens? Again, let me just pull the plug back out of the wall, right? And retract that cable so I can withdraw and sit here. Which then leads to an unfortunate dynamic of then your partner's getting more loud and more emotional because they're like, well, I just need to turn up the volume because he's not hearing me, right? But that has been my own journey, has been how can I be solid and grounded and be in touch with my emotions at the same time? Because that's such a gift when you can do that. That's such a gift when you can access your humanity fully, right? Not just this, what we define as the masculine side, but what we define as the feminine side as well. When I can tap into all of that, now I start becoming a whole person, right? Now I start becoming a whole person.
That's everything right there.
Yeah. Yeah. Our journey to wholeness. Our journey to hold this. And I'm coming up on 55 this year. you shared 51. I mean, like, this is a lifetime journey.
Yeah.
This is a lifetime journey.
Well, we'd love to hear where people can find you.
Yeah. So, my site, Breathe With Me, it'll be in the show notes. So going to Breathe With Me is the easiest way, or you can reach out to me directly at John@JohnHallCoaching. And either way, I love, love, love this conversation. This has been so phenomenal. Thank you guys so much. This is such an honor. And yeah, love this conversation. I love everything that we were able to talk about and how that flowed.
Mm-hmm. Do you do breathwork group events in person?
I do group events, virtual events, online training, the online course, and then I work with one-on-one, men and women individually as well, right? Most of my management and tech consulting is with businesses as well, so one-on-one in businesses.
It's a full plate, sounds like.
It is a full plate. It is a very full plate, and I love it. I absolutely love sharing this. I really do.
It's so beautiful, so needed. So we love to finish up with giving you the opportunity to share a message with the world.
Yeah, you know, if I had one, you put me on the spot here. Give us a message to the world. It would just be how powerful a pause can be. To find those moments that you can pause, you can breathe, you can connect with yourself. And that is where I think the magic happens.
Agreed.
That's so good.
What a great episode. I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. Let us know what you took from that. Leave some comments, share with a friend who also might resonate with the story, subscribe, like, all those things so that we can spread the word about our podcast. And so all of our beautiful stories that we get to hear from our amazing guests get to be shared around the world. We appreciate you as a listener, and we'll see you next time. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Deeper Awareness Podcast, where the journey of self-discovery and inner growth continues to unfold. We hope this episode has ignited a spark within you and inspired you to embrace a more conscious and authentic existence by looking within. If you enjoyed today's conversation, be sure to subscribe and stay tuned for upcoming episodes, where we'll continue to explore the transformative power of breathwork and emotional healing. Continue the conversation and stay connected with us on Instagram. Follow at Deeper Awareness Podcast to receive daily inspiration, valuable tips, and updates on our latest episodes and offerings. We'd love to hear your thoughts and insights from today's show, so feel free to share them in the comments below or tag us in your posts. Your engagement and feedback mean the world to us as we strive to continue to create content that resonates and empowers our incredible community. Together, we can continue exploring the depths of consciousness, fostering genuine connections, and supporting each other on our transformative journeys. This episode is brought to you by You Belong Breathwork, your destination for transformative healing and self-discovery. At You Belong Breathwork, we believe in the power of breath to unlock the deepest parts of ourselves, leading to profound insights and a greater sense of connection and belonging. Whether you're seeking emotional healing, a deeper connection with yourself, or a path to authenticity, our breathwork sessions, retreats, and coaching programs are designed to guide you on this transformative journey. Our experienced facilitators are here to hold space for you as you explore the depths of your consciousness and discover the infinite potential within. Visit youbelongbreathwork.com to explore our offerings and download a free guided breathwork session. Thank you for being a part of our deeper awareness community. Stay connected, stay curious, and may you embrace your true essence with love and compassion. Goodbye for now, and see you in the next episode.